Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, Mick. It's great to be here today.
Thanks for joining us on 2SER. What an exciting week it must be to celebrate 50 years of the moon landing. Can you remember the first time you thought about or saw that someone had landed on the moon? Do you remember what you thought?
Yeah, so, I mean, I wasn't there at the time. I didn't live through it, but I remember it would have been one of the anniversaries, maybe the 30th anniversary.
Yeah.
I would have been a little kid, and I actually remember my parents coming and getting me out of bed and saying, quick, you know, you've never seen this before. And it was those famous grainy images of Neil stepping off the ladder onto the surface of the moon. And I don't think I really understood at that age the impact that that moment had had for the people who were there at the time.
Well, definitely. I mean, we're talking about something that gripped the world, 1969. I reckon 500 million people tuned in to watch that event on TV. Now, Neil Armstrong was maybe a little bit distracted as he broadcast from the moon because he reportedly messed up his line. He said, that's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. But he said, instead of one small step for a man, I thought there was one little letter that he missed out in there.
Yeah, he did. And people have debated backwards and forwards, and so has he, whether he stuffed that line or not.
When you were creating the exhibition, was there anything that you found out about the moon landing that maybe you didn't know or really surprised you?
I think for me it was more gaining a sense of the impact that the mission had on people. As a scientist, I struggle to think of any scientific accomplishment before or since that time that has had the same, permeated popular culture in quite the same way. So one of the things we've got on display is a collection of memorabilia, more than 100 pieces from the museum's collection that, you know, people collected envelopes and stamps and made certificates to say that they were there watching the TV live when it all happened. So it was, you know, it just goes some way to showing, I think, how invested people were.
Well, definitely, it's such a huge thing. And, of course, all part of that space race of the 60s where America was trying to beat Russia to the moon or into space. And, of course, Russia beat them with Sputnik, with the satellite. But then America trumped them with the moon landing. In this digital age we're in now, we probably don't really get or sort of relatively think what NASA was faced with to make this a success, like science and technology-wise. I read that there's more computing power in a smartphone than there was on a lunar module. what was really involved in getting them to the moon? Like, how much technology? Was it stuff like cutting-edge sort of stuff?
Yeah, it was all absolutely at the cutting edge. I mean, you know, you ask kind of what did they have to develop to get there? It was, you know, everything almost. They had no idea before that how to get people into space and safely bring them back down again. Didn't know even in the beginning whether people could, for instance, eat and swallow in space. So there was absolutely everything to figure out, from the very big challenges right down to the small things.
Yeah, right. And there's no sort of way to test that a lot of the time until you do it. I mean,
it's
so risky to think that, you know, all these, the people that went up, the three astronauts that went up, I can't imagine how they were feeling, because it just would have been just nerve-wracking, but so exciting at the same time.
Exactly.
I read also, I was just looking, been reading up about it, but of course, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin were on the first lunar module there, but also Michael Collins. But I don't believe he actually walked on the moon. Is that right?
No, he didn't. So he stayed alone in orbit on the command module while the other two kind of got all of the fame and glory.
That's it.
Having come, you know, 99% of the way there, he didn't actually get to descend to the surface, didn't get to step foot on the moon. And we've actually created a virtual reality experience where you can kind of get inside the mindset of what was that like for him, sitting alone in the command module, the loneliest human alive, really.
Obviously amazing to be just where he was anyway, but, you know, people don't remember that name, Michael Collins. That was the third guy.
No, exactly. when you say that name, people more often than not, they go, who? Yeah. Whereas Buzz and Neil, obviously everyone knows those names.
Yeah. Obviously, we only see sort of space travel in movies most of the time, and we don't appreciate how long it takes, but can you tell us, like, how long it took from taking off to getting to the moon to coming back again? What sort of time period were you looking at?
It was actually an 8-day mission. So they launched on the 16th of July, landing on the moon, obviously, as most people know, on the 20th of July, or would have been the 21st actually here in Australia, yep. and splashing back down 4 days after that on the 24th of July in the Pacific Ocean. So it was quite a long mission at that time.
So here we are, obviously celebrating the launch of Apollo 11, which happened maybe around today, 50 years ago.
Yeah, yesterday, yeah.
But on the 21st, which will be, was that Sunday?
Sunday, yes.
Is when the actual landing happened.
That's it.
You mentioned Australia and obviously the time difference, but we all sort of have this theory or this knowledge that Australia played a role in the Apollo program, but how were we involved?
Yeah, so not everyone knows this, although you will if you've seen The Dish, a classic Australian movie. Not all of it accurate, but Australia did play a critical role receiving the famous images of that moonwalk. So two stations in Australia, Honeysuckle Creek, which is outside of Canberra, and the Parkes Radio Telescope in New South Wales, were receiving those images. So Honeysuckle Creek received the first 8 minutes, and then the Parkes telescope was just waiting for the moon to rise and took over at that point. Its bigger dish gave NASA such better image quality that they then stayed with them for the rest of the 2.5-hour moonwalk broadcast.
Yeah, it's a pretty awesome story, especially that, you know, that big dish in Parkes is still there. You can go visit it. And,
it is. They've got a great visitor center there.
Integral part of the moon landing. The moon landing itself, of course, there's a few more missions that went to the moon. I think I read that 12 people have walked on the moon.
That's correct,
in
yeah.
total. And I recently, I think I read something about them wanting to go back. What do you know about this?
Yeah, so I guess you're referring to the later Apollo missions. So Apollo 17 ended up being the last to land on the moon, but they had planned all the way up to Apollo 20.
Right.
And those last three missions, 18, 19, 20, all ended up getting cancelled. Kind of, you know, once the moon landing had happened, once that race had been won, the drive and the competition to keep doing that sort of bottomed out.
Yeah, the buzz, oh, not the buzz, but the excitement of winning the race to the moon, I guess, sort of, and maybe the money dried up and they were like, oh, I can't afford to do this anymore.
Exactly. And, you know, there were a lot of other things happening around that time, obviously, as well.
What about Mars? Are we going to get to Mars? Are we going to walk on Mars at some point in our lifetime, do you think?
Yeah, I think we will. It's really coming closer now. NASA are very much talking about putting people on Mars, possibly establishing a permanent human colony there. And we're also seeing lots of private space companies. And so people are almost talking about this being a second space race. And I think this time it's more those private companies showing what can be done and driving the government organisations to really kind of get back into that race.
Yeah, like I did read 2024 was a prospective day to go back to the moon, but we'll see.
we will see.
Well, the exhibition's on at Powerhouse Museum and it's some really great stuff, as you mentioned, artifacts, and then there's a giant 7-metre moon you can check out as well. What will the Powerhouse be doing on the actual day of the anniversary itself?
So we've got a whole day of celebrations this Sunday, so the 21st. If you come to the museum, I'll be running tours of the exhibition all day, every hour. We've got tours of our permanent space gallery, which is always a popular one with families. And then we've got lots of other activities happening on the floor. So we've got our Space Odyssey Tinkertorium, where kids can build a Mars colony. They can build a moon buggy and race it over a lunar surface. We've got all kinds of exciting things happening to celebrate that.
Fantastic. And the exhibition's on till January, which is great. Lots of
opportunities. Yeah, we've got a good long run.
Yeah, really great. And you're going to be there doing things all the way through it, or just now and then?
Yeah, no, I'll be around from time to time.
Well, go and say good day to Dr. Sarah Reeves. She's you're the curator of the exhibition, right? So
that's correct. Yeah.
You'll be able to get all the inside knowledge about where all that stuff came from and what it means or what it meant to the mission itself. Sarah, thank you so much for your time. Really exciting weekend for you and months to come. And good luck with it all, the whole exhibition.
Thanks very much, Nick. Great to talk to you today.
Cheers. That was Dr. Sarah Reeves. She's the curator of the Apollo 11 exhibition going on at Powerhouse Museum right now, or if you like, you can also call it the Museum of Applied Arts and Sciences, all the way from now until January 2020. So you've got plenty of time, but make sure you get to check it out.